years ago, a friend of mine who was a fellow tech and a really good bass player, got to be 20 years ago maybe, was moving from my area to, you know, New York to Portland. And she said, well, why don't we just do something fun for a few weeks and do something fun. We'll record a few songs, do an EP, and just, like, go out and do a pile of clubs, you know, for the summer before I have to split in 6 or 7 weeks. And I said, sure. And she named it, and we did a bunch of shows, like D.C. and Baltimore and Nashville, you know, just kind of connecting with friends. And then we came back and sold a handful of CDs, I guess. We pressed them ourselves. You know, they're all, you know, homemade, everything, paper labels, the whole bit. But we did sell, a pile of them. That we, I made 50, and I think we came back with, like, 3. So, just for a little fun, jaunt. And then she moved to Portland. And I wasn't really sure what to do, and I didn't do anything with it again for, like, a year. And then someone mentioned, like, why don't we just do something and use a name? And it kind of stupidly fell together again, and then it just, I just never got off the horse. Active in like 4 years, Molly went off and doing other things, and script writing and starting a family and things like that. So I did other projects with other people, but then I wasn't really happy with where it was going, and there's various reasons that it didn't feel right. It didn't sit right with me, these other projects. So one of the people I work with, Wally DeBacker, who people know as Gautier, he's one of my friends and clients. He kind of made some suggestions, so I kind of just then circled the wagons, worked with just myself, and called Molly up to see if she'd be interested in it, and we just, you know, with no real plan or anything, just recorded 4 songs, and each song represented something Wally suggested or came up in conversation. So they were just exercises in arranging and just having some fun. We had no intention of putting it out as the Lost Patrol or any of that stuff. We were just having some fun arranging and writing. And then, you know, Mike said if we press it, you know, who always worked with us in the Lost Patrol, doing both, you know, on the road as a musician and also as doing all the graphics and websites, he offered to do what, you know, artwork for it. And it was, like, pretty apparent that if her name and my name and Mike's name is on the same thing, people are going to just hear it as the Lost Patrol anyway. And that's what we did. And then one of the songs got picked up for a Netflix, you know, ending credit song or something on some TV show that I'm still not entirely clear how that where that went, but apparently it got picked up, so we're like, okay, at least there'll be a CD available, and we'll put it up on iTunes eventually and all that stuff. And so it wasn't really supposed to even be a release. It just was an arranging exercise. And now, you know, here we are.
CD gone to radio yet, or is it too soon in the process for that?
I have a few friends who are DJs that, you know, wanted copies, so I gave them copies, but we haven't really done a radio promotion yet. And that'll probably come this fall when I have a little time in another month or so. But it's being played, I think, on a few stations.
My reaction to it was, this sounds like the Lost Patrol, but it sounds like a next stage Lost Patrol. What was the as far as the people there under the family umbrella, as it were, how did everybody feel about the results?
Well, everybody seemed to like it. I think she likes it. She enjoyed doing it, but she's pretty busy with other stuff. So there's no real commitment to do anything other than just we did the songs and that was kind of it. Yeah. You know, she's got other things going on right now, and I'm working with some other people too. So it's, but I'm always open to it. You know, she and I work together fairly well, so it's not like we have to sit and figure out a big plan. This was just something like I wanted to try some things. She was willing to jump in, and it was really no more than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't any big thought process of doing anything beyond just having some fun recording. And bizarrely enough, with no other goals other than to have some fun and try some arranging, it seemed to be more fun to do, and more people seem to like it.
To
Went very easy, actually. I mean, we don't, you know, we're not, we work fairly easily and efficiently together, and it was kind of fun and you know, exactly what we thought it would be.
What are you currently working on? As from what I know about you, you usually have about 12 irons in the fire to some degree. What are you working on currently, either for your own music or for other people's projects?
Well, I still, you know, that with Wally, I mean, he made a bunch of suggestions, which kind of seeded other things. So I have a list of about 12 things I want to get to. Some are instrumentals and some are vocal tunes. I'm just not sure I'm going to handle them. I'm just, you know, I'm just going to go along at the same pace. So right now I'm working on a bunch of instrumental stuff. And then I'll see what happens maybe around the holidays if I want to crank up anything with singing.
A lot of people are 18, 19 years old. They've got like a part-time job at a grocery store or maybe at Blockbuster. What were you doing around the age of 19 or 20?
I wasn't really sure what to do. I got kind of, you know, I hadn't really played much music before then. I dabbled a little bit. I wasn't playing anything. I wasn't in bands or anything like that, really. But I actually started out as a bass player in my 20s. But I actually fell into, like, you know, I was kind of rudderless and didn't know what to do, but someone took me to a Broadway show, and I'm like, well, this looks like fun, you know? So I somehow hustled my way into the union and became a union sound man on Broadway by the time I was, like, I don't know, 20 years old or something. So and I did Broadway for, like, 6 years.
So previous to that, had you, you know, run sound in clubs or something, or did you just pick it up really quickly?
Yeah, usual, like, you know, just helping friends out where I could, or, you know, someone else. They were always, the other people were always the band, and, you know, it was just a social thing. I'll, you know, I'll run the mics if you're singing, so
right.
Really nothing more than that.
Started working on Broadway, did you have any interaction with like the cast or anything, or is there like a invisible wall between the sound people and the people on the stage?
Oh no, I had a great time. I was treated really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I worked with like people like Sir Ian McKellen and, you know, Tim Curry and you know, all people from the Royal Shakespeare Company. I was doing mostly plays.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it plays with miking and sound effects and stuff. So it was great fun to be part of that. You know, it's one of those things when you're in the middle of doing something, you're a kid, you don't realize how cool it is. You don't really appreciate it. So I guess looking back, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty cool. I was like 20 years old and doing that. But no, I was treated really, really well. I was, you know, you have at least a nodding acquaintance, but also as a sound man on these plays, you do a lot of rehearsals with them and stuff. So while they're doing cast changes and changing over the cast, you know, you rehearse with them. So you do get to, you know, work with people that, you know, and you're there to do a job, you know. So I was very, very fortunate. I had a great time. I was treated great.
Did you want to talk briefly about the... this is back in the summer, I guess, but the big project you had with Wally Down Under.
On which project was Wally? We do a lot of projects with Wally.
I don't know if it was a tour, but a series of shows with this ancient instrument that you're one of the few people on Earth that knows how to repair.
Yeah. One of the things I've done right along in concurrent with Broadway and when I left Broadway is I became a technician, doing like amp repairs and designing and building equipment, and then that kind of escalated into building like touring gear and reviving consoles, and I got very deep into vintage analog gear, including synthesizers, and you know, I wound up restoring a lot of Moog modular gear from the 60s and 70s, and you know, more than just repair work, I was doing full ground up restorations. So that kind of led, that just kept building, and I wound up meeting Wally, like a friend of a friend. All my work is almost word of mouth, and he bought this instrument that I had not really had any real experience with called an Ondioline, which was from France, and he was kind of heartbroken because he spent years looking for one, and he bought one sight unseen, and you know, he's a very bright guy. He's incredibly good with research and history and documenting all the things that he's interested in, and he's wanted to play one of these instruments, and it was just a total train wreck, and I said, well, I'll give it a shot, and he was very patient, and I basically got the whole system up on how to restore these instruments, and again, full ground-up restorations. The first, it was like, well, we'll just get one to work for him, and then it was like he was going to do some recording, and then he was going to try a couple of shows. So it just sort of escalated as we got better at building, you know, restoring these things. And then we went out, we decided to do like 12 shows in Tasmania and Australia, which kind of caught me off guard because I'm like, these are 70-year-old instruments and 60-year-old instruments. And I'm like, I'm not really sure we should be touring these things on the other side of the world. They're fragile, and we did spend a lot of time getting them fully restored, but it's still, you know, a fragile 70-year-old instrument.
Yeah.
So we got them fully working. We pulled the tour. He didn't miss a show. I came back with probably post-traumatic stress syndrome or something. But hopefully that's not going to happen too often. They were like, yeah, we're going to go to, what do you think about going to Australia? And I said, Australia? I don't want to go to Secaucus. I thought they were actually kidding when they first brought that up.
Right.
So I'm like, but we pulled it off. The problem is, of course, once you do that, then they're like, oh, then, you know, Steve can walk on water and Steve can, you know, like, no. That's not how it works. You don't want to, the numbers will catch up with you eventually on these kind of endeavors.
Yeah, get your water shoes ready.
Yeah, so but, you know, Wally's an incredibly talented, but very, you know, high degree of intellectual curiosity. So it's always this, we're on this kind of, always turning over the compost pile of history as he looks for new things to explore. And right now I've got a Soviet USSR tape deck, or actually tape echo, on my bench that he found somehow that from the 60s or 70s that we're going to go through. But I see all kinds of stuff.
Oh, God.
And I don't know where he turns it up, but it's quite an adventure working with him.
Well, I would assume that most people listening to this are familiar with the Lost Patrol, but if there was a new person out there, other than the new album, is there an album or two that you view as high watermarks that you would suggest, or is it kind of pretty much just throw a dart and anyone will do?
For what?
To just kind of get an idea, you know, everybody will probably go to Spotify and do a playlist kind of thing, but I'm so old, I'll just try to find out, you know, what's a great representative album and buy it and just kind of immerse
It's hard to say, because like anybody who accumulates any kind of a catalog of material, they go through their kind of love and hate at different phases with all of it.
Yeah.
So like I hear it differently than anybody else does. I'm like, oh, that was the day the singer was really mad at me. That's why, you know, the vocals sound that way or something, you know, so, you know, or that was the day that I, you know, my guitar was a little out of tune, but I didn't go back and track it. I should have fixed it. And that's all I hear, but it's not, you know, I like the new EP,
right?
Because it kind of represents kind of stuff I wanted to do and just never got around to doing. I like that. And, you know, for some reason, the first CD with Molly sells the best. I can't understand that, because, you know, it was very raw. It was done on an 8-track cassette machine. And again, we were just with no plan or anything. We met Molly. And so, you know, the stuff with her has more depth and more, you know, I think we did 5 CDs or 6 CDs with her.
Yeah.
And the stuff with her, you know, basically 2008 on, I think, basically mm-hmm. that stuff just has, I think, a greater range. So we got to experiment more because she wasn't really fixed in any one thing. So, you know, pretty much from Midnight Matinee forward, any of that stuff has some merit to it somewhere, I think, that, yeah, as a songwriter anyway, for me.